Good morning to each one gathered here this morning. I do greet you in Jesus' name. It's a privilege and a blessing to be here in the house of God with all of you again this morning. So I thought I could just add that if you remember last month when Sherwin was down to take in Earl and Lucy, that was my Sunday to preach, and I had asked him to preach that Sunday, and he was on schedule today. So we basically just did a switch to help his schedule out just a little bit, and that way he could do both at one time instead of making two trips down here. So that's why I am standing here before you this morning, and it was my mistake that I did not correct that, and it was a mistake in the bulletin then. I did not pass that information along correctly, so sorry about that. Hopefully it's not too much of a disappointment that Sherwin's not here to preach. I will try to bring something of inspiration as well. For a message here this morning, I've been inspired recently as I was reading an Old Testament story, as I studied into an Old Testament story, and I would say that the service in many ways has led up to my message very well. The title that I have given the message this morning is A Heart of Kindness. And that goes well with Brother Galen's devotions, and it can go hand in hand with the thought of unity. It can go well with the Sunday school lesson, which had to do with unity, had to do with getting along with other people and differences in some of those areas. And if we have a heart of kindness behind it, and I want to take a deeper look at that, a heart of kindness, how we as people can have this, can grow in having a heart of kindness, and how God's kindness towards his people is something that we should never take for granted as well. The story is told of a Boston taxi cab driver who dropped off a homeless man at a hotel. The homeless man had just finished living in a homeless shelter for the past 6 months when he had inherited an incredible sum of money. This homeless man inherited nearly $200,000. It was then that Raymond, a 72-year-old taxi cab driver with more than 50 years of experience on the job, noticed a forgotten bag. Opening it up to find a name, he found stacks of 50s and $100 bills inside. He worried the man might be dangerous, so he decided to bring the cash to a local police station. Only the money was not ill-gotten. Instead, it was the homeless man's money that he accidentally forgot in the cab. After the homeless man left, located his money, he offered the cab driver $100 for his honesty. The cab driver felt that the man should have given him more money as a reward. After all, this $100 reward was equivalent to less than half a penny for every dollar that this taxi cab driver had returned to this homeless man, which was a very large or considerable amount of money, $200,000. As I read that story, I was amazed that both of these men, they did show a level of kindness. There were things that they could have done or did not have to do that they did do. But on the other hand, it seemed like neither of them were doing it in a heartfelt way. Both could have done more and expected less. The cab driver, he was a little bit disgruntled, as the story goes, when it was all said and done, because he only received a $100 reward. And you could say that this, I don't know what the circumstances of this homeless man were that he received $200,000, but he could have given a greater reward than just $100 for returning $200,000. But anyway, we have these people that there was a level of kindness, but yet it was not from the heart. It was not a true, deep expression of love for what had been done. So today I want to talk a little bit about how we can continue to develop kindness as people. It's something that in my own life I know I continue to need to grow in, to do better at. Mark Twain said this, "Kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see." It's something that people can feel. It's not only visual, it's not only heard, but it's a feeling. We know when somebody is being kind to us. We very much know when somebody's not being kind to us. So today I want to motivate us to be kind. Kindness is a is a display of love. It's the internal feeling of love that we have that is on display. It's the outward working to others. It's a real demonstration of the love we have inside. And I want to take the time to look at an Old Testament story where kindness was put on display, a kindness that, frankly, it was displayed in a way that, in many ways, is above what our human nature would want to do. And this is a story of David, and David was displaying this kindness. You can turn in your Bibles a while to 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is a very beautiful Old Testament story, and I just want to try to take the time and read through a number of verses. I'm just jumping through 1 Samuel and then some going into 2 Samuel. And we're going to read the story here about Saul and David and Jonathan and Jonathan's son Mephibosheth. Starting at 1 Samuel 17, verse 53. So here, just to bring you up to speed a little bit, this was as David was fighting Goliath. And we know that story very well, but we're jumping in right after that story, right at the end of the story there in 1 Samuel 17, verse 53. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. And this was Goliath's head. And he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistines, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell." And the king said, "Inquire thou whose son this stripling is." And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am a son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And it came to pass, when he made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And David took him, and Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garment, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and he behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. That's the beginning of this story. Turn over a few chapters. To Samuel chapter 20. Excuse me. Verse 38. Sorry, I'm not sure what I got in my throat there. And Jonathan, 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 38. And Jonathan cried after the lad. Let me back up just a little bit. This is leading up to when we know that Saul was pursuing David in many ways. And here Jonathan said he would go to his dad and see what his plans were. And then they went out, and he took his servant along, who was going, and he shot shot arrows as a sign for David. And so this was after that that happened. And so here Jonathan and David were making another covenant, or showing their friendship, in 1 Samuel 20, verse 38. And Jonathan cried after the lad, "Make speed, haste, stay not." And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the lad knew not anything. Only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery unto his lad and said unto him, go carry them to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of the place between the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times. And they kissed one another and wept one another until David exceeded. And Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. And it was from that point that David went his own way, was fleeing, fleeing from Saul, which was Jonathan's father. And I think if I have it correctly, this would have been the last time that David and Jonathan were together. And so they continued their covenant that was taking place back there in chapter 17. They promised that the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. Turn over, continue to 2 Samuel chapter 4. I thought I had jotted down. Anyway, it does not matter. It was right around this period of time when Saul and his three sons were killed as well. But then, so here was, this was happening at about the same time. We go to 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame on his feet and was 5 years old when the tidings came to Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel. And his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass as she made haste to flee that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. That's the first time we see of this son of Jonathan, whose name was Mephibosheth. And so this was happening as there was a battle going on between the Philistines and Israel, and Saul was killed and Jonathan was killed, and there was great fear because, as you know, that the kingly line was something that was treasured, or if they could kill sons of the king or kings themselves, the royalty, that was a very, very defeating way of defeating another nation. And so there was fear here. So this nurse was trying to take Jonathan's son into hiding in case he would also be killed, and could even have been killed by the king that would follow. Since Saul was killed, there had to be another king, and a bunch of Saul's sons were killed, and Saul knew that David was going to be taking the throne, so they were probably hiding him from the Philistines, maybe even actually hiding him from David, because he was going to be taking the throne. And it was a very common practice that a king who was going to be put on the throne would do away with all of the previous king's ancestors if it was not in the same family line, and so it would kill them all off so that none of them could rise up and be king. So there was fear. But through that all, something sad happened, and there was he now was lame or was crippled and could not walk. So his life probably changed very dramatically and very quickly from being a grandson of the royal king and to being a small boy that was lame on his feet, and his dad and his grandpa and many others of his uncles there were killed as well. Continue to 2 Samuel verse 9. I want to start at verse 1. And David said, is there yet any that is left to the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they called him unto David, the king said unto him, art thou Ziba? And he said, thy servant is here. And the king said, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan hath yet a son which is lame on his feet. And the king said unto them, Where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, Behold, he is in the house of Michar, the son of Amiel, in Lodibar. Then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Michar, the son of Amiel, from Lodibar. Now when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come unto David, he fell on his face and did reverence, and David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, Behold thy servant. And David said unto him, Fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. And he bowed himself and said, What is thy servant, that thou shouldest look upon such a dead dog as I am? Then the king called to Ziba, Saul's servant, and said unto him, I have given unto thy master's son all that pertaineth to Saul and to all his house. Thou therefore and thy sons and thy servants shall till the land for him, and thou shalt bring in the fruits that thy master's son may have good food to eat. But Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread always at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then said Ziba unto the king, According to all that my lord the king hath commanded his servant, so shall thy servant do. As for Mephibosheth, said the king, he shall eat at my table as one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Michah, and all that dwelt in the house of Ziba were servants unto Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth dwelt in Jerusalem, for he did eat continually at the king's table and was lame on both his feet. Going to stop reading there. Just want to go back a little bit and think about this story and how it all the pieces came together and this great kindness that David was showing to Jonathan's son. So we know that David lived approximately about 1,000 years before Jesus. That'd be about 3,000 years ago. And David was a prominent person in the Old Testament. It's said that there's more information about David than any other Old Testament character. And I think because there was a connection, and maybe it's for us today, maybe it was for people of their day, but there is these parallels that can be drawn between David and Jesus. And when Jesus came, we know that it was through the lineage of David, but Jesus is called the Son of David. He was not called the son of Moses or the son of Abraham or something like that. There was this uniqueness about David and his life that was in many ways was depicting who Jesus was, the coming of the Messiah. And when David was at his best, we can see the glimpse of the heart of Jesus. And I think this story in many ways was showing the heart of Jesus, his kindness towards the lost, the kindness towards the fallen, the kindness towards the cripple, the lame, the ones who were down, the ones who were not of royalty, not of like high society, the ones who needed love and kindness. And David had found unique favor in God's eyes as he was the greatest king of Israel. He came from being a lowly shepherd who was not desiring the kingdom. He was not desiring to be king in any way. They know that when Samuel anointed him, he had to be called in from the fields. And then he went to visit his brothers here on the battlefield when Goliath was killed. And out of a heart of righteous indignation, he wanted to his people, the Jews, the children of Israel, to be victorious over the Philistines. And so he went out to battle. And that's where I started the story here this morning, is him killing Goliath. And then through that, and I don't know exactly, and maybe you can tell me your opinion, why the heart of David was so knit with the heart of Jonathan. And it seemed because of his eager, zealous fighting for his people and for fighting for what the Lord wanted. It seemed like that alone, or that was what connected David and Jonathan. There was other times when Jonathan went out and fought against like the Philistine garrisons, and he did it on his own, even when Saul hadn't sent him there. And it seemed like there was a spirit, or the heart of the two men were very similar. They were wanting what was right for their people and for God, and so their endeavors were very much the same. So we know that it says that their hearts were knit. There was a close bond and friendship. We have Saul, on the other hand, as the other character in this story. And Saul, as we know, was Israel's first king, but the Lord had rejected him because of his lack of a godly character. And it was years before God had instructed, as I said, the prophet Samuel to anoint King David, who was going to take the throne. And that would have happened earlier on. I did not actually look that up. Was that actually had happened before the story of David and Goliath? It happened definitely early on. So Jonathan would have been one of the people who would have very naturally come. If the kingly line would have followed a family line, Jonathan would have been in line more than likely to be on the throne. He could have been king of Israel. But in many ways, back to Saul before we get to Jonathan, Saul became very jealous. And we know that as the story goes on, Saul was on the hunt for David. And Saul knew that David was going to be the next king, that he was the anointed one. And so his jealousy took over Saul's life, and he did things that were not even rational in his pursuit of David. He hated him. No matter what people said or did, or how they would try to bring up David, Saul hated him. The women sang about David, and it drove Saul to a rage. David too tried to help Saul by playing music and trying to soothe Saul, and Saul tried to throw a spear and pin David to the wall. We know that story as well. It seems like David was trying to help, and it just made Saul angry because of the character, I think, of who David was. And so Saul chased David for many years. And there was times that it drove David to live with the Philistines. He lived in dens and caves and had a very ragtag group of men that followed him around. And he was on the hunt for David for many years. And so through that all, if you had had somebody who was chasing you and somebody who hated you so greatly, would you ask this question many years later? Is there any left of the house of Saul that I may show kindness to that house? But the very important part is the end of that question: for Jonathan's sake. It was, I think David in many ways had forgiven Saul for what he had done, but there was not a great love there for Saul. But it was because of Saul's son Jonathan, because they were knit at the heart. That goes into Jonathan, the third character in this story here. Their friendship had blossomed despite Jonathan's father's extreme jealousy of David. Why was Jonathan not jealous like his father? Why did Jonathan not become angry that this man David was going to be taking over what was could have been rightfully his? We don't know all those answers. I guess we have to believe that Jonathan was somewhat of an upright man, and he knew the way of the Lord as well. The course of their friendship is continued on the whole way through a time when, as I mentioned, when Saul was trying to murder David, and he chased him, and that was part of the story there back in Samuel 20 when Jonathan even went into his father to try to talk sensibly to him and say, why don't you, and there was times that he did, there was times that Jonathan talked with his father and Saul would leave it lay for a little bit, and then he would go back and he would get riled up again and the rage would continue. And Jonathan talked to him in 1 Samuel 20, Jonathan was talking to him there but could not reason with him. And so he told David to flee for his life, to go to head his way. And so Jonathan was caught in somewhat between this man Saul and his friend David. Should he side with his father or should he side with his friend? And I'm sure that was not always an easy decision to make. I'm sure there was pressures, and there was times that even his own father threatened his son's life because he was siding with David. But he was very true to his friendship. He had a heart of kindness for David, no matter what. And it was a friendship that was deep. If you go back to I'm assuming it's the very first meeting of Jonathan and David back after David had killed Goliath. We notice there that Jonathan made a covenant with David. And he stripped himself of his robe, his sword, and his bow. And it seems like at that point in time, it seems very much as a symbol of Jonathan giving the throne to David, or giving royalty to David, to give him a robe, to give him his sword and his bow, his rod, handing everything over to him, making a covenant with him. It seemed like there was something very monumental in that transaction. We know that was the heart, or the very core of this relationship, this friendship that took place. And no matter what came after that, their friendship was never broken. I would say that Jonathan and David did not have an ordinary friendship. It was something that was deeper than definitely our human nature would be common for a human nature. You would tend to probably break those covenants or break that relationship if your father was hunting him down and threatening you as well. And then we have Mephibosheth, the grandson of Saul and the son of Jonathan. His name, Mephibosheth, it's saying the meaning of that name is from the mouth of shame. And it may have been came because of him being crippled. And Mephibosheth was only 5 years old when his father died. And as I said, we looked at that story a little bit earlier here, how that they were fleeing, and probably fleeing from the enemies, and maybe even fleeing from David himself. And the nurse took him and hid him. They kept him in a place of seclusion, because we see here that even probably a number of years later, because he was 5 years old at the time of Jonathan's death, and then here in this chapter 9, it talks about him having a son, so it probably at least 20 years later, David is trying to find some of the house of Saul so that he could be kind to them for Jonathan's sake. And he did not know that this Mephibosheth existed. Maybe Mephibosheth was just lost in all of Israel, but my guess is it was probably that he was still somewhat in hiding. We'll get to that a little bit later because of where they found him. Or actually, we'll get right there. And my first point that I want to make is the importance of kindness. We want to look at David's incredible kindness for a moment. So David learned about Mephibosheth's existence and found him in this town called Lodibar. Now the name Lodibar means no pasture. It's a no-nothing place. It was not something that was fertile. It was not a well-watered place. It was probably out of the way, somewhat of a hidden place. So this grandson of Saul went from being a grandson to losing probably almost everything and living in a no pasture or a no nothing place. Picture somewhere dry and dusty. So he's crippled on his feet, living and more than likely still somewhat in hiding because his fear of what David could potentially do to him. And David found him. We don't know what all took place when David's men came to get Mephibosheth. I'm sure that was a scary moment for him. Here the king David is sending for him. I'm sure there was still fear that was in his life of what would he do because of what his grandfather Saul had done to David? Was he going to find him and now kill him off after these many years. But David was not seeking the descendants of Jonathan to secure his throne or to distinguish Saul's bloodline, but to show them kindness because of a covenant that he had made with Jonathan. The Bible says in Ephesians, very familiar verse, Ephesians 4:32, "And be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." In a world of chaos and violence, acts of kindness tend to stick out. And that was very true even back here when David sent for Mephibosheth. Instead of killing Mephibosheth, he invites him into his family as one of his, as one that sat around the royal king's table, basically as one of his own adopted children. It was a very monumental thing to do, to take somebody in the descendants of the previous king that was not from family and bring them into your own, to sit around your own table. David restores the servants, as we know here, restores the servants to work the land, to bring some profitability and to bring some productivity to all of the land that had been Saul's. So Mephibosheth moves from exiled to crippled to possessing numerous servants and sitting and dining at the king's table. A very big turnaround in a very short period of time. Not because of anything he had done, not because of anything that was in Mephibosheth's life, but because of things that had taken place in his father's life and because of the man that his father was. The second point is that we need to look for opportunities. We need to be looking for these opportunities. In order for us to show remarkable kindness, we need to look for these opportunities. Yes, we need to be kind all the time, but sometimes we need to look around us, be observant, and see what can be done, just as David did. The window of kindness opens and closes. Sometimes we only have this brief moment when we can show this act of kindness. And then it's gone to somebody we may meet in passing, whether we're just simple thing of meeting at a door at a store. You hold the door open for that person. Maybe you smile to them. You probably will never see that person again, but were you kind? There's others that those windows of opportunity are open longer. Maybe it's your family that you live with daily. That window of opportunity more than likely will stay open longer, but it will maybe close at some point in time too. We do not know how long we have. So as we think about that, it should drive us to be kind at all times, because it may be the last moment that we can do that. A few things that will stand in our way of kindness: if your idol is your clock, your calendar, your schedule, you will never have enough time to be kind. If that's what is driving you, the clock or your schedule, you will never have enough time to be kind. If your idol is money, kindness will always be too expensive. We wish we could be kind, but it simply costs us too much. If money is your ultimate goal, then kindness will just be too expensive. If your idol is self-importance, if you feel self-importance, kindness will be too costly to get mixed up in the problems of a down-and-out person, a crippled person, somebody from a lower class. If we want to keep our self-importance, kindness will cost us too much to get involved with those that are down-and-out. Or if your idol is your race, then kindness will be too costly because the person does not look like you. They do not speak the same language as you. So therefore, you cannot be kind to them. And it's amazing how quickly that can creep into our own lives, where we can tend to maybe stereotype different people, different nationalities, or we maybe are not as kind to some as we are to others. And that's not a Christian attitude at all. Think about your normal day in your week. What is it that is keeping you from being kind? Do not miss out on the opportunities. Is it your clock, or is it the schedule, your schedule? Is it money? Is it self-importance? Is it who you are, your race? Are those things that get in your way of being kind to others? The nicest thing we can do for our Heavenly Father is to be kind to one of His children. The nicest thing we can do for our Heavenly Father is to be kind to one of His children. You see, every person on this earth is one of God's children. And so if we're being unkind to them, we are being unkind to somebody that is created by God, one of His children, somebody He loves. And so it should not be, we should never be unkind to them. Something else that happened in this story is a relationship that I want us to see is a relationship between David's character and God's character. David said there in 2 Samuel 9:1, "Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" See, David's kindness tells us about God's kindness in a number of different ways. I want to look at that and draw a few parallels too about from David's kindness and God's kindness and how they can kind of fit into this story as well. You see, David searched for Mephibosheth, and God searches as well. Just as David searched for someone in Saul's family to show incredible kindness to, God searches for you to demonstrate His incredible kindness this morning. "Is there any in the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him?" He wanted to show God to this person. God searches for you just as David searched for Mephibosheth. So in some ways, David was living out an example of who God is. David also remembered, and God remembered. You see, David remembered the covenant he had made with his friend Jonathan. He had not forgotten that. And this was a number of years, probably at least 20 or maybe even 30 years after the death of his friend Jonathan, and he had not forgotten that covenant. And the same way, too, God does not forget the covenants He makes with His people. Just as David showed mercy because of his promise to Jonathan, God shows mercy because of His promise. God showed mercy because of His promise to King David. God is committed to you. He sacrifices for the relationship even when it does not meet His needs. It's not something that God needs, but He does it because He has promised it to us through His Son, Jesus, because of what He has done for us, that mercy that has been shown to us. And He remembers us, even when we do not remember Him, even when we walk away from Him, even when we're not His best friend anymore or a child of His, He still remembers us. He still comes out and He searches for us because He has made a covenant with us. And then we too are just like Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth did not deserve this, nor do you or I. We do not deserve this. It's not because of something that Mephibosheth did, but it was because of what his father had done. Why did Mephibosheth receive such kindness from David? It's a question we should think about because of what his father did. David was kind of Mephibosheth because Mephibosheth's father put his life at risk to save David. Jonathan was willing to relinquish his throne so that David could ascend to that coveted position. He was willing to lay down his own desires, his own things that could have been rightfully his, except that God had already taken it from him. And he did that. And David was true to that from then on. And so in doing, it was a small or big act of kindness that David could do for Jonathan, a beloved friend, a friend who he had a covenant with. Mephibosheth was blessed because of what his father did. Mephibosheth did not deserve it. There was really no connection between David and Mephibosheth. David didn't even know Mephibosheth existed, but it was because of people from before, an older generation, that he showed his love to him. It was not that Mephibosheth deserved it. Neither do you or I deserve God's grace and mercy. But it's because of God's loving kindness that, and his work on the cross, that he has extended it to us. It's because of Jesus. And Jesus is somewhat depicted in this story. Jesus is Jonathan, and you and I are Mephibosheth. So if you think about that, Jesus' love for us, and we are the undeserving son. And we benefit from what Jesus did, just as Mephibosheth benefited from what his father Jonathan had done. Kindness is a characteristic of God himself. In Luke 6, verse 35 and 36, it says, "But love your enemies and do good, lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. But be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful." Just like David showed kindness to his enemy, God showed his kindness for his enemies. And the same should be true for us today. We should have that same heart, just as it says there in Luke, "For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful." If you're like me this morning, you probably have that tendency. The carnal nature wants to be kind, have a heart of kindness towards those who are kind to you. And if somebody despises you, hates you — I don't know that we've ever had anybody hate us to the degree that Saul hated David — we can tend to not be kind, not be, or at least not show it in ways. We maybe can put up with that person or a children of that person. But here we see David searched out for Saul's family. And the same way God searches out for us this morning, to those, to the unthankful and to the evil, it says there in Luke chapter 6. And so just a challenge for us this morning to be kind and to continue to grow in that, and pattern our lives after David and Jonathan, have a covenant as strong as them, a love that their hearts were knit together, and that covenant continued for many years. May we continue to grow in our kindness with all those who are around us and those who are close to us. Sometimes that can be the hardest, just as hard or harder as well. Let's come before the Lord in prayer.